The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
They will come and I ain't lying. My mom said they don't stop playing with me.
Morning glory, America. Lil Wayne has never let off the Hugh Hewitt show before, but this is the first time he's endorsed Donald Trump as well in one of those bits of news that you just don't see coming. Ice Cube, 50 Cent, didn't see him coming. Lil Wayne, 30 plus million followers on Twitter, gives a thumbs up to President Donald Trump. That may move the needle, my friends. That may move the needle in the black community in a way that the Platinum Plan, which is cited by Lil Wayne, and which is an important document, and Tim Scott's Economic Zones and the First Step Act, they were all pushing on the black vote, and then Lil Wayne came in and knocked it over. We'll see what happens. Look, if you're tired and you're out there working for Martha McSally or Susan Collins or David Perdue or Tom Tillis, I've decided this segment is for you. Let's start with Gene Hackman in Hoosiers, cut number 16.
There's a tradition in tournament play, not talk about the next step until you've climbed the one in front of you. I'm sure going to the state finals is beyond your wildest dreams, so let's just keep it right there. Forget about the crowds, the size of the school, their fancy uniforms, and remember what got you here. Focus on the fundamentals that we've gone over time and time again, and most important, don't get caught up thinking about winning or losing this game. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners. Okay?
Denzel Washington, and Remember the Titans for you people who are tired and your puppies are sore.
Anybody know what this place is? This is Gettysburg. This is where they fought the Battle of Gettysburg. 50,000 men died right here on this field, fighting the same fight. And we're still fighting amongst ourselves today. This green field right here, painted red, bubbling with the blood of young boys, smoke, and hot lead pouring right through their bodies. Listen to their souls, man. I killed my brother with malice in my heart. Hatred destroyed my family. You listen. You take a lesson from the dead. If we don't come together right now on this hollow ground, we too will be destroyed. Just like they were. I don't care if you like each other or not, but you will respect each other. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you will learn to play this game like men.
Then there's a great Kurt Russell playing the magnificent Herb Brooks, cut number 18.
Great moments are born from great opportunity. And that's what you have here tonight, boys. That's what you've earned here tonight. One game. If we played them 10 times, they might win 9. But not this game. Not tonight. Tonight, we skate with them. Tonight, we stay with them. And we shut them down because we can. Tonight, we are the greatest hockey team in the world. You were born to be hockey players. Every one of you. And you were meant to be here tonight. This is your time. Their time is done. It's over. I'm sick and tired of hearing about what a great hockey team the Soviets have. Screw them. This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Herb Brooks was a great man. Now, whether you're working for Susan Collins in Maine or Tom Tillis in North Carolina or David Perdue in Georgia or Lindsey Graham in South Carolina or John James in Michigan, Joni Ernst in Iowa, Steve Daines in Montana, Martha McSally in Arizona, no matter where you are, you've got to remember there are lots of motivational speeches. You got to even remember Robert Loggia in Necessary Roughness, cut 20.
Now, let's analyze what's been working for us. Not a thing's been working for us. Like, the suit doesn't work for me. And this stinking tie, and the shirt, it doesn't work for me. You know how to play winning hard-nosed football. You play football like Ed Gennaro played football. A guy who gave his life for this football team. He was a 140-pound halfback, and he played like a wild man. So, like rampaging beast. And that's the way you're going to do it. You go out there, you take heads off, and you're on the next. Let us pray.
Let's pray. Robert Loggia. In fact, let's play that again, because this actually goes to how do you win a Senate campaign? How do you win the presidency? Cut number 20. Play it again.
Now, let's analyze what's been working for us. Not a thing's been working for us. Like, the suit doesn't work for me. And this stinking tie, and the shirt, it doesn't work for me. You know how to play winning hard-nosed football. You play football like Ed Gennaro played football. A guy who gave his life for this football team. He was a 140-pound halfback, and he played like a wild man. So, rampaging beast. And that's the way you're going to do it. You go out there, you take heads off, and you're on the next. Let us pray.
So look, if you're up there and you're walking precinct for Susan Collins in Maine, or you're down in Arizona and you're walking precinct for Martha McSally, or in Montana and it's snowing and Steve Daines needs you to do another block, or Lindsey Graham is out there driving around with you or talking to you over the phone and you got to make another 4,000 phone calls, or Joni Ernst asks you to go through a row of corn and find the house at the end of the street, or David Perdue says, look, I just got to get someone over to Macon. You get in the car and you do it. It's the last weekend. I got one to play after the break by Al Pacino, but I'll go back up. I'll finish with Gene Hackman again, Hoosiers, because, you know, you don't get to this weekend unless you've been working for a long time. I used to do campaigns. This is what you got to be thinking about, cut 16.
There's a tradition in tournament play. Not talk about the next step until you've climbed the one in front of you. I'm sure going to the state finals is beyond your wildest dreams, so let's just keep it right there. Forget about the crowds. the size of the school, their fancy uniforms, and remember what got you here. Focus on the fundamentals that we've gone over time and time again. And most important, don't get caught up thinking about winning or losing this game. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential, to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners. Okay?
There and join Lil Wayne and 50 Cent and Ice Cube and work all weekend. Do me a favor, go to HughHewitt.com, Alliance Defending Freedom banner at the very top. It's the last day I'll ask you to do this. While you're winning for your Senate candidate for President Trump or whoever you're working for, remember that they are doing what needs to be done to keep your religious liberty intact. Please go to HughHewitt.com and give a gift, the best gift you can give to Alliance Defending Freedom. You can call 866-359-9644 as well. 866-359-9644 or go to HughHewitt.com and hit Alliance Defending Freedom. Then come back because we still got to play Al Pacino, which is the best of all the motivational speeches. Stay tuned. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. A 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384. Welcome back, America. I know a lot of you people are very excited by the polls. They are all closing. I mean, Trump is now up 1-3 in Florida. He's down 2 in Nevada. He's up 1 in Iowa. He is up 2 in Michigan. I mean, the latest polls are all showing what many of us predicted, a completely impossible to call race. So if you're working for Susan Collins or Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Susan Collins in Maine, David Perdue in Georgia, Lindsey Graham in South Carolina, John James in Michigan, Joni Ernst in Iowa, Martha McSally in Arizona, Steve Daines in Montana, you're tired. You don't want to do it again. You got 72 hours. Here is this is Al Pacino in Any Given Sunday. Maybe the greatest coaching speech ever. Here we go.
3 minutes. To the biggest battle of our professional lives, all comes down to today. Either we heal as a team, or we're going to crumble. Inch by inch, play by play, till we're finished. We're in hell right now, gentlemen. Believe me. And we can stay here, kicked out of us, or we can fight our way back into the light. We can climb out of hell. 1 inch at a time. Now, I can't do it for you. I'm too old. I look around, I see these young faces, and I think, I mean, I made every wrong choice a middle-aged man can make. I pissed away all my money, believe it or not. I chased off anyone who's ever loved me. And lately, I can't even stand the face I see in a mirror. You know, when you get old in life, things get taken from you. I mean, that's part of life. But you only learn that when you start losing stuff. You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch. We claw with our fingernails for that inch. Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying. I'll tell you this, in any fight, it's the guy who's willing to die who's going to win that inch. And I know if I'm going to have any life anymore, it's because I'm still willing to fight and die for that inch. Because that's what living is. The 6 inches in front of your face. Now, I can't make you do it. You got to look at the guy next to you. Look into his eyes. Now, I think you're going to see a guy who will go that inch with you.
Hell yeah.
You're going to see a guy who will sacrifice himself for this team because he knows when it comes down to it, you're going to do the same for him. That's a team, gentlemen.
Hell yeah.
And either we heal now as a team or we will die as individuals. That's football, guys. That's all it is. Now, what are you gonna do?
Al Pacino in a game of inches. That's for all of you campaign workers out there. Got another 72 hours to go. Those are the 5 best coach speeches I could find. Go out there and kill yourself for 72 hours. You'll win. Stay tuned, America. Welcome back, America, to Hewitt. I have got one of the two economists I talk to regularly. Jerry Boyer is, along with Brian Westbury, one of the two economists I actually understand. And Jerry, you know, when I took Ec 10 in college, I managed not to flunk, but I was pretty doggone confused. So you and Westbury are the only guys I trust because you both share my worldview and you try and break it down for us. So I read with great interest your brand new book, The Makers and the Takers, available at Amazon.com right now. We're going to talk about that at length. It's heavily annotated, but I've got to ask you first, the number that came out yesterday, 33% yep. GDP growth. What's that mean, Jerry Boyer?
Well, it means the best GDP, quarterly GDP growth we have in recorded American data history. So that's a good thing, right? Now, we had the worst the quarter before. So it's like you and I have had in these ongoing discussions that this is the kind of recession unlike any other. Forced lockdown, extremely steep contraction, and then a really quick bounce back, because it's not like a typical recession where there's, say, interference with the financial system. The system wasn't broken. The system was paused. And when an economic system is paused rather than broken, then you can unpause it. And we've mostly unpaused it. Might not feel like it socially, but we've mostly unpaused it. And so the economy's about 2/3 back to normal output.
And so are you optimistic about what that portends? Number one, you're an addict of the prediction markets. Does that impact the prediction markets for next week's election? And number two, what's it tell us about the fourth quarter?
The fourth quarter can't match this because it's just impossible to match this kind of growth serially. But I think the fourth quarter will be a good quarter. So I think we're back to normal levels of output probably about the middle of next year. It's sort of like this. It's one of these things where you go down hard, you come up quick, and then it gets harder, a little harder to get back to normal. I think this is in charge. This is in time to affect the election. But in some sense, without this bounce back, the election was lost to Trump. So this kind of growth gets him back in the game.
And he'll be talking about it all weekend long, and I'm sure the media will be downplaying it. And I've already seen stories this morning following up on yesterday's data suggesting that it's not enough and it's already ruined because virus is back. Just objectively, Jerry, I don't believe that to be true. I don't think we're going back to the lockdown. I just refuse to believe Americans will put up with it.
Yeah, look, objectively, I'm not a political person. I might have political views, but if I forecast badly for a while, I can't support my family. You know, so if I toe a political line, then what I'm doing is I'm putting politics ahead of my actual calling and my way of making a living. Objectively, the president's policies were a good growth mix. Once he, you know, dealt with the trade war and you resolved that stuff, it was a good growth mix. COVID was a kind of an exogenous event, came out of nowhere. We've largely dealt with the worst of it in terms of economics. There is no way the American people are going to put up with broad lockdowns from their governors. And if Trump is president, he's not obviously going to do that. So we've got a pretty decent road to recovery. There are some headwinds, but given what this was, we've done extraordinarily well. I mean, you have to grade on a curve during a plague. You know, it's kind of an amazing civilization that can basically go from here to here in 6 months in a plague. That's pretty astonishing.
The resilience is remarkable. Now I want to turn to the book, The Makers versus the Takers. And I got to tell you, I got a kind of an electric shock when I began it, Jerry, because for years, as a Catholic, the social gospel has meant you have to be a socialist. And that isn't true. And I want you to tell your story first, how you came to conversion and how you brought your economic credentials along with you rather than working backwards. Because I think people need to know the Jerry Boyer story to understand the significance of the makers and the takers.
Yeah, well, I came to conversion. Well, I was a Marxist. So I was interested in economics. Marxists are interested in economics, or they pretend to be interested in economics and are really interested in power.
Yes.
And so for me, it was perfectly obvious when I went from Marxism to Christianity that it's not just my worldview that would change or my religion, but that my economics had to change too. The atheism and the Marxism are tied up together. If there's no God above, then man has to become God. You can't have chaos. So somebody has to have a plan. Somebody has to be in charge. No God as ultimate providence, then you're going to have the state as ultimate providence. And that was 40 years ago when I became a Christian. And during that, ever since then, as I've studied the Bible, I've also remained someone economically aware. Eventually, I became an economist, went to college, got jobs, ran a think tank. And as I read the gospel stories, I couldn't not make myself an economist. I couldn't forget. Just like when you read the gospel stories, you're a lawyer, you're a political analyst, you see angles, and you can't just like force yourself down into devotion and piety mode. Yet you like see things that you can't unsee. This has been maybe a 35-year journey of trying to understand Jesus's economic message.
And you are against over-spiritualization. I thought in The Makers versus the Takers, that's a very important thing. When I read the Gospels, I am a lawyer. I look at the Pharisees and I say, is he talking to me? Because the Pharisees are basically lawyers. Jerry right. Boyer reads it, and your political views have changed dramatically over the course of time, but your economic views haven't, right? You're still a free market guy.
Absolutely, I'm a free market guy. But what I didn't want to do is impose my free market stuff on Jesus. I've seen other conservatives do that in the form of, let me put it this way. You had a reaction, right, to the idea of social justice or a social message in the gospel, because it's all, in our time, that's always the left. By the way, the phrase social justice was created by conservative Catholics in the 1800s against socialism. But like everything else, the left stole it. OK, so we have this reaction. Well, you know, when you read Jesus not carefully, he does sound like a socialist. When you skim over some of the gospel accounts, the story of the rich young ruler, et cetera, some sections from the Sermon on the Plain, he kind of sounds like a socialist. So what happens is the left turns Jesus up to about one quarter volume, and they say, see, he gives away free health care. He's a socialist. A lot of times the right kind of reaches in and says, no, and they kind of turn that down. Oh, he's just talking about your hearts, or he's just talking about how to go to heaven. It's like, what I want to do is turn the volume all the way up and really hear Jesus' social message. And he does have a social justice message, but it's not remotely like the things that are put into his mouth by social justice advocates.
There are two aspects to the makers versus the takers, Jerry, I want to underscore. One, I've never read the Magnificat, which is a very Catholic poem. Mary speaking in her response to Elizabeth, it's something, if you go through K through 12, you're going to read a lot because you're going to have Virgin Mary days. The Assumption and the Immaculate Conception are celebrated, and the month of May is Mary Day. So I've never read the economics of the Magnificat before. And then the poor you will have with you always is aimed at the ruling class. I that's a barb. That's important for people to understand. It is a prod. It is a prick. Let's talk about both of those. When did you start reading the Magnificat that way? Because that is really going to stun a lot of Catholics.
I started reading. I listened to it. I love Bach's Magnificat. So that was part of my like regular playlist. And I kind of got deep into my heart and my soul. And my wife and I were talking about it. And it was just like, wait a second. Have we ever noticed how political and economic this is? I'm not saying it's not religious. I'm saying that our distinction between religion on one side and politics and economics on the other side is a modern distinction. Well, you interviewed Tom Wright about this. That was all an integrated thing in Second Temple Judaism.
Yes.
Right? So, and he's been helpful in that regard. We don't come to the same conclusions economically. So Mary has opinions. She was and is an intelligent woman with strong analytical opinions about political philosophy. And if we really pay attention to the Gospels, we see her seeing things and then pondering them in her heart. She's deep. She's intelligent. And yes, she's political. She's a Galilean. She knows that the Judean ruling class has been ripping people off. She's got a problem with that, but she's not a revolutionary. She's waiting for God to solve the problem, and then she comes to the unbelievable realization that her son is the solution to the problem that her people have been waiting for. And she puts that in the Magnificat, and what's fascinating is this: Protestants, and I am a Protestant, are going to have trouble with this because so much attention on Mary, but she's a major character. And if you line up Jesus' Sermon on the Plain with her Magnificat, he's almost quoting her. She had an influence on him. She would have been the main educator. They're a homeschooling society. She was probably the more educated of the two between Joseph and Mary because she grew up in Sepphoris, which was a very sophisticated city. She was smart. I'm not saying she was educated. She didn't educate women, but she was around high culture and finance. And Jesus, yes, he's God, but he's still man. And he learned. And he learned from his mother like any good boy learns from his mother. And one of the things he learned from his mother is not to trust that ruling class in Judea because they're not really following God properly and they don't have the interest of the people at heart, which they're supposed to.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of visibility into the years of Jesus's youth. But you made me think about a new visibility into it because of your treatment of the Magnificat. Now, before we're out of time, and people have to go and read the makers and the takers, the makers versus the takers for themselves. And Boyer, by the way, is spelled oddly because he's from Pennsylvania. B-O-W-Y-E-R. B-O-W-Y-E-R. I know he's a Steelers fan. I'm not even going to bring it up. The poor you will have always with us. Tell us the context. What is it supposed to mean?
Well, right. It's in the context of Judas Iscariot denouncing him for accepting an expensive gift. But it's basically a quote of Deuteronomy 15, which is saying to the rulers of Israel, if you obey my law, you will have a growing economy. There is a growth imperative in the Bible. I wouldn't go so far as to say they're supply siders, but I would say supply sider is and Brian Westbury's supply sider is tapping into a biblical growth imperative. But if you don't obey, you won't have the growth, and you also don't take care of the poor. So God promises if you obey me, you will never have the poor. You won't have the poor among you anymore. But because you will disobey, you will always have the poor. This, again, is aimed at the ruling class. It's not universal. And the fact that this is in the presence of Judas Iscariot, probably the only Judean among Jesus's followers. There's a big Galilean versus Judean kind of conflict.
Didn't know that until I read your book, by the way. Hadn't thought about that. I know Bible scholars will know that, but it never occurred to me. It's like having everyone on your team come from California as opposed to Arkansas.
Exactly. And Galilee was a decentralized economy, lower taxes. They didn't have the Roman tribute tax. They were more entrepreneurial. They were more growth oriented. They were small business. One archaeologist says you can't dig up a village in Galilee without finding three or four shops. So it was a kind of a shopkeeper entrepreneurial society. Judea was a company town, and the company was the temple, and the temple is a political entity. It's a way of, you know, extracting various taxes. The tithe was a tax. It was mandatory, physically, you know, mandatory. So Jesus never says a single confrontational thing against any wealthy person in Galilee, even though there were wealthy people in Galilee. Sepphoris is right next to Nazareth. It was the financial center of Galilee. We have mansions. So there would have been connections with wealthy people in Jesus' social circuit, but he doesn't confront any of them. It's not until he comes down into Judea, the state-centered economy, not until he passes like Chevy Chase, you know, and keeps going down south, that all of a sudden we start to hear this stuff about, you know, woe to you who are rich, and to the rich young what? The rich young ruler, archon, senator, would be a good translation, member of the Sanhedrin, that we start to hear about problems with rich people. Because he's not denouncing wealth, he's denouncing, sometimes we talk about crony capitalism. He's denouncing wealth gotten by means of political pull and manipulation through extraction. Yeah,
it does fit with millennials. He's denouncing privilege abused. And I put it to you, Jerry, that the makers versus the takers will change many, many viewpoints of people who take the time to read it. Congratulations on the makers versus the takers. Any predictions for Tuesday, Jerry?
None that you're going to like. I just go to the futures market. I'm not smarter than the crowd. I'm kind of worried. But I predict that whatever happens, that the message, the Galilean message of Jesus is something we can use to rebuild. And if we recenter on that, maybe we can have a broader coalition.
Jerry Boyer, always a pleasure to talk to you each week. And it's great to read The Makers versus The Takers. Thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
Joined now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show as we coast towards the election, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. You know, remember I've often said that we poets are particularly good at seeing the future? Well, that's all behind us now. The data set before me is full of contradictions. Bearing that in mind, it's not much fun to make predictions. Are the augurs taking flight, ducklishing? Ducklingish or swanish? Is the situation clear, or is it Rashomonish? Do the people think that Trump has gone as far as he can go? Will they turn for some relief and some stability to Joe? Will a next election night bring fireworks the like we've never seen? Will the models get it right? And what does early voting mean? Are the voters out in droves because their guy's a great debater? Do they want a little rest, or do they yearn for something greater? Should one team be preparing a parting valedictory, or will scandal rip a candidate right from the jaws of victory? Has there ever been a year that saw our country more divided? Is anybody out there in the least bit undecided? Will the flames that we've been fanning ever be diminished in the middle of next week if this finally is finished? Why, it isn't even certain that next week it will be done. Like COVID, this may linger into 2021. That's No Predictions Here by Tarzana Joe.
All right, Joe. Ducklingish or swanish? That is, to me, it's a new record for flexibility in the language.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Ducklingish or swanish? That's going down in the Tarzana Joe Hall of Fame among workarounds. That's what I call that. How's the poetry business? We had a 33% quarter. Is your poetry demand up 33%?
About 25%. There's a little lag, but there's always a poetry lag, you know, like energy sector, the poetry sector is just a little lagging.
Don't get left behind, America. Go to TarzanaJoe.com to read his great work and write him at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com for all your poetry needs. Rates are reasonable. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. May I just say that a poem I wrote last week, I rhymed the word Uruguayan. So I think Rashomonish was just a little, you know,
Duckley-ish, Swanish, Rashomon. I just, I'm blown away.
Thank you, Joe.
Right. I'm also blown away by your generosity to Alliance Defending Freedom. Today is the final day of my month-long campaign. You have been helping us ensure that the Alliance Defending Freedom are fully funded. If and when you or your friends or your family's religious liberty and free speech rights are threatened, we only have time to finish fulfilling the commitment to help make sure this campaign is successful across our entire network, across Salem. We're about $47,000 away from our network-wide goal. I know you can help all my colleagues cross the finish line. You help me, you help them. Please go to HughHewitt.com right now. Click on that ADF banner. In order for us to stay on pace, I'd like to raise 11 grand today and have you, at least, one of you can sit out there and watch, write a $100,000 check to Alliance Defending Freedom, and their lawyers matter that much. We have a new Supreme Court. It's going to be fully engaged. They're staying on the sidelines in the run-up, which is right in my view. They're sequestering all the ballots that are controversial. If we get into overtime, it will matter. We have a new Supreme Court. But the Alliance Defending Freedom doesn't look at the election. They look at the Constitution in the next 25 years. They've got to be in the field. They got to train up young lawyers in Blackstone. They need your help today. So please, won't you go to HughHewitt.com, click on that banner at the very top. Or let me give you the phone number as well, and I'll tell you about Relief Factor. By the way, you can find out where to vote by going to KeepAmericaAmerica.com. I played you all those coach talks. KeepAmericaAmerica.com is where you find the information you need to get an early vote in. My son went and stood in the rain yesterday to vote early. He didn't want to vote on Election Day. You can do that, and KeepAmericaAmerica.com will tell you where to go and do that. KeepAmericaAmerica.com. You can call Alliance Defending Freedom at 866-359-9644. Let me remind you as well, Birch Gold, what is gold doing today? After Amazon blew out the lights yesterday, yep, gold is at 1874. What an entry point. There are two things I own, gold and Amazon. Amazon is just an extraordinary company, but gold will keep your portfolio anchored in reality. Go to HughGold.com, HughGold.com. Amazon and Google blew out the lights. Apple and Twitter disappointed. It was an interesting day, but at the end of a day like that, I mean, the COVID cases rising, you want to go make sure your portfolio, especially your IRA or your 401k, is anchored 10%, maybe 15%. Some of you go as high as 25%, not more than that, in solid precious metals that they keep for you at Birch Gold. You go to HughGold.com, HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Finally, ReliefFactor.com. I didn't take it last night. I was talking to Jerry Boyer, and I couldn't talk about it, so I'm going to close the hour by taking my Relief Factor. Coach, I know you're listening. What, he didn't take his Relief Factor? Sometimes you run the sneak play, right? You run at the end of the segment. Like OBJ when he's back from his ACL going around back. I got my Relief Factor in the fourth segment today. You thought I'd miss it? No. It was on the play sheet. It's always on the play sheet. I always get it in. ReliefFactor.com. Icarian, Kirkman, Resveratrol, and Omega. You got to take it. You got to make sure you're ready for the weekend. All you campaign workers that I'm talking to, the people who are out there working for Martha McSally in Arizona and Susan Collins in Maine, most influential senator in the United States, most endangered Republican, but she's come back, Martha McSally, Susan Collins. They all need ReliefFactor.com this weekend. If you're walking Atlanta for David Perdue, if you're walking North Carolina for Tom Tillis, ReliefFactor.com. All you folks in Michigan walking for John James, ReliefFactor.com. Hi, Hugh Hewitt for ReliefFactor.com. If you are in pain and you want out of pain, well, you need to talk to the people that get it done. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father-son owners of ReliefFactor.com. They tell me that sometimes whole families can be helped when one member of the family gets out of pain. For example, finally, a married couple gets to sleep through the night again when one isn't tossing and turning with a terrible back. That's why Pete and Seth created the 3-week quick start, so you can find out if those people are you. For about $1 a day, you can see if you can get out of pain, and after that, lessen the cost of a cup of coffee a week to stay out of pain. The 3-week quick start is like a trial pack, and it can be at your door in about 2 to 3 days. Let's face it, getting older, exercise, even everyday living can create discomfort, pain. You don't order Relief Factor just for yourself. Order it for your wife, your husband, your family, your friends. They miss the old you, too. 3-week quick start at ReliefFactor.com or call 800-500-8384. 800-500-8384.